everyone, and welcome to Book Readings. I do want to start off this podcast unofficially, technically, by saying that I am sorry for how long it's taken me to put out this first podcast episode, but I am going to get on a schedule, and I will be uploading more and more efficiently. But the first thing is first, we will, just to go over some basics, we'll be reading two chapters a podcast, and of the books that we do read. So that's just going to give you a little bit of an insight as to what to expect. I will say that I'm trying to think of how to word things correctly. So I will say this, that our first book is not a series. It's a novel by John Grisham or Grisham or something like that. It's called The Guardians. And I think I'm going to start this off by just reading the bio out for you guys so you know what it's about. And then we can get right into it. In the small Florida town of Seabrook, a young lawyer named Keith Russo was shot dead at his desk as he worked late one night. The killer left no clues. There were no witnesses, no one with a motive. But the police soon came to suspect Quincy Miller, a young black man who was once a client of Russo's. Quincy was tried, convicted, and sent to prison for life. For 22 years, he has languished in prison, maintaining his innocence. But no one was listening. He had no lawyer, no advocate on the outside. In desperation, he writes a letter to Guardian Ministries, a small nonprofit run by Cullen Post, a lawyer who is also an Episcopal minister. Guardian accepts only a few innocence cases at a time. Cullen Post travels the country fighting wrongful convictions and taking on clients forgotten by the system. With Quincy Miller, though, he gets far more than he's bargained for. Powerful, ruthless, people murdered Keith Russo, and they do not want Quincy Miller exonerated. They killed one lawyer 22 years ago, and they will kill another without a second thought. Now, I will say this. I don't know what this book is rated. I would just get prepared for anything, really, but I really don't think it's going to be that bad. I also want to say that I'm not a professional at reading. This is literally a podcast for those people that want to just sit back and relax, listen to someone read a book, and to not have to worry about anything. And to not have to pay for it either. This is all completely free. I may mess up on a couple of words, and I'm so sorry if I do. I will try my best. I really will. But without further ado, let's get into the first chapter. All right, let me. I have something in my eye, and it's annoying me. Okay. 1. Duke Russell is not guilty of the unspeakable crimes for which he was convicted. Nonetheless, he is scheduled to be executed for them in 1 hour and 44 minutes. As always during these dreadful nights, the clock seems to tick faster as the final hour approaches. I've suffered through 2 of these countdowns in other states. One went full circle and my man uttered his final words. The other was waved off in a miracle finish. Tick away. It's not going to happen. Not tonight, anyway. The folks who run Alabama may one day succeed in serving Duke his last meal before sticking a needle in his arm, but not tonight. He's been on death row for only 9 years. The average in this state is 15. 20 is not unusual. There's an appeal bouncing around somewhere in the 11th Circuit in Atlanta. And when it lands on the desk of the right law clerk within the hour of this execution, will be stayed. Sorry, let me reread that sentence. And when it lands on the desk of the right law clerk, within the hour, this execution will be stayed. So sorry for that. Duke will return to the horrors of solitary confinement and live to die another day. He's been my client for the past 4 years. His team includes a mammoth firm in Chicago, which has committed thousands of pro bono hours, and an anti-death penalty group out of Birmingham that is spread pretty thin. 4 years ago, when I became convinced he was innocent, I signed on as the point man. Oh, sorry, excuse me. Currently, I have 5 cases, all wrongful convictions, at least in my opinion. I've watched one of my clients die. I still believe he was innocent. I just couldn't prove it in a time. One is enough. For the third time today, I enter Alabama's death row and stop at the metal detector blocking the front door, where 2 frowning guards are protecting their turf. One holds a clipboard and stares at me, as if he's forgotten my name since my last visit 2 hours ago. Post, Cullen Post, I say to the dunce. For Duke Russell. He scans his clipboard as if it holds vital information, finds what he wants, and nods to a plastic basket on a short conveyor belt. In it, I place my briefcase and cell phone, same as before. Watch and belt, I ask like a real smartass. No. He grunts with an effort. I step through the detector, get cleared, and once again an innocence lawyer manages to properly enter death row without weaponry. I grab my briefcase and cell phone and follow the other guard down a sterile hallway to a wall of bars. He nods, switches click and clang, the bars slide open, and we hike down another hallway, trudging deeper into this miserable building. Around a corner, some men are waiting outside a windowless steel door. 4 are in uniform, 2 in suits, 1 of the latter is the warden. He looks gravely at me and steps over. Got a minute? Not many, I reply. We move away from the group for a private chat. He's not a bad guy, just doing his job, which he's new at, and thus he's never pulled off an execution. He's also the enemy, and whatever he wants, he will not get from me. Excuse me. We huddle up like pals, and he whispers, "What's it look like?" I glance around as if to evaluate the situation and say, "Gee, I don't know. Looks like an execution to me." "Come on, Post. Our lawyers are saying it's a go. Your lawyers are idiots. We've already had this conversation." "Come on, Post. What are the odds right now?" 50-50, I say, lying. This puzzles him and he's not sure how to respond. "I'd like to see my client," I say. "Sure," he says louder as if frustrated. He can't be viewed as cooperating with me, so he storms off. The guards step back as one of them opens the door. Inside the death room, Duke is lying on a cot with his eyes closed. For the festivities, the rules allow him a small color television so he can watch whatever he wants. It's on mute with cable news giddy over wildfires out west. His countdown is not a big story on the national front. Can I even speak today? And at act, so sorry for all of you who just don't understand how I can't read. At execution time, every death state has its own silly rituals, all designed to create as much drama as possible. Here, they allow full contact visits with close family members in a large visitation room. At 10 p.m., they move the condemned man to the death room, which is the next door to the death chamber where he will be killed. A chaplain? Yeah, let's go with that's how that's said. A chaplain and a lawyer are permitted to sit with him, but no one else. His last meal is served around 10:30, and he can order whatever he wants, except for alcohol. "How you doing?" I ask as he sits up and smiles. "Never felt better. Any news?" "Not yet, but I'm still optimistic. We could hear something soon." Duke is 38 and white. And before getting arrested, For rape and murder, his criminal record consisted of 2 DUIs and a bunch of speeding tickets. No violent whatsoever. He was a party boy and a hellraiser in his younger days, but after 9 years in solitary, he was settled down considerably. My job is to set him free. Which, at the moment, seems like a crazy dream. I take the remote and change channels to one from Birmingham, but I leave it on mute. You seem awfully confident, he says. I can afford to. I'm not getting the needle. You're a funny man, Post. Relax, Duke. Relax? He swings his feet to the floor, smiles again. He does indeed look rather relaxed, given the circumstances. He laughs and says, Do you remember Lucky Skeleton? No. They finally got him about 5 years ago, but not before serving him 3 last meals. 3 times he walked the gangplank before getting the shove. Sausage pizza and a cherry Coke. And what did you order? Steak fries. Steak and fries with a 6-pack of beer. I wouldn't count on the beer. Are you going to get me out of here, Post? Not tonight, but I'm working on it. If I get out, I'm going straight to a bar and drinking cold beer until I pass out. I'll go with you. Here's the governor. He appears on screen, and I hit the volume. He's standing in front of a bank of microphones with camera lights glaring at him. Dark suit, paisley tie, white shirt, every tinted hair gel with precision, a walking campaign ad. Sufficiently burdened, he says. I have thoroughly reviewed Mr. Russell's case and discussed it at length with my investigators. I've also met with the family of Emily Brune, the victim of Mr. Russell's crimes, and the family is very much opposed to the idea of clemency. After considering all aspects of this case, I have decided to allow his conviction to stand. The court order will remain in place, and the execution will go forward. The people have spoken. Clemency for Mr. Russell is therefore denied. He announces this with as much drama as he can muster, then bows and slowly backs away from the cameras, his grand performance complete. Elvis has left the building. 3 days ago, he found the time to grant me an audience for 15 minutes, after which he discussed our private meeting with his favorite reporters. If his review had been so thorough, he would know that Duke Russell had nothing to do with the rape and murder of Emily Brune 11 years ago. I hit the mute again and say, No surprise there. Has he ever granted clemency? Duke asks. Of course not. There's a loud knock on the door and it swings open. 2 guards enter and one is pushing a cart with the last meal. They leave it and disappear. Duke stares at the steak and fries and a rather slim slice of chocolate cake and says, No beer? Enjoy your iced tea. He sits on the cot and begins to eat. The food smells delicious and it hits me that I have not eaten in at least 24 hours. Want some fries? He asks. No thanks. I can't eat all this. For some reason, I don't have much of an appetite. How is your mom? He stuffs in a large chunk of steak and chews slowly. Not too good. As much as you might expect, a lot of tears. It's pretty awful. The cell phone in my pocket vibrates and I grab it. I look at the caller ID and say, Here it is. I smile at Duke and say hello. It's the law clerk at the 11th Circuit, a guy I know pretty well. And he informs me that his boss has just signed an order staying the execution on the grounds that more time is needed to determine whether Duke Russell received a fair trial. I asked him when the stay will be announced, and he says immediately. I look at my client and say, You gotta stay. No needle tonight. How long will it take to finish that steak? 5 minutes, he says with a wide smile as he carves more beef. Can you give me 10 minutes? I asked the clerk. My client would like to finish his last meal. We go back and forth and finally agree on 7 minutes. I thank him, end the call, and punch another number. Eat fast, I say. He was suddenly found his appetite and it was as happy as a pig at the trough. The architect of Duke's wrongful conviction is a small town prosecutor named Chad Fallwright. Right now, he's waiting in the prison's administration building 1/2 mile away, poised for the proudest moment of his career. He thinks that at 11:30 he'll be escorted to a prison van, along with the Bruin family and the local sheriff, and driven here to death row, where they'll be led to a small room with a large glass window that's covered with a curtain. Once situated there, Chad thinks they'll wait for the moment when Duke is strapped to the gurney with needles in his arms, and the curtain will be pulled back in dramatic fashion. For a prosecutor, there's no greater sense of accomplishment than to witness an execution for which he is responsible. Chad, though, will be denied the thrill. I punch his number and he answers quickly. "It's Post," I say. "Over here on death row with some bad news. The 11th Circuit just issued a stay. Looks like you'll crawl back to Verona with your tail between your legs." He stutters and manages to say, "What the hell? You heard me, Chad. Your bogus conviction is unraveling, and this is as close as you'll ever get to Duke's scalp." Which, I must say, is pretty damned close. The 11th Circuit has doubts about the trivial notion of a fair trial. So they're sending it back. It's over, Chad. Sorry to ruin your big moment. "Is this a joke, Post?" "Oh, sure. Nothing but laughs over here on death row. You've had fun talking to the reporters all day. Now have some fun with this." To say I loathe this guy would be a tremendous understatement. I end the call and look at Duke, who's feasting away. With his mouth full, he asks, "Can you call my mother?" "No. Only lawyers can use cell phones in here, but she'll know soon enough. Hurry up." He washes it down with tea and attacks the chocolate cake. I take the remote and turn up the volume. As he scrapes his plate, a breathless reporter appears somewhere on the prison grounds and, stuttering, tells us that a stay has been granted. He looks bewildered and confused, and there is confusion all around him. Within seconds, there is a knock on the door and the warden enters. He sees the television and says, "So I guess you heard." "Right, warden. Sorry to ruin the party. Tell your boys to stand down and please call the van for me." Duke wipes his mouth with the sleeve, starts laughing and says, "Don't look so disappointed, warden." "No, actually I'm relieved," he says. But the truth is obvious. He, too, has spent the day talking to reporters and savoring the spotlight. Suddenly, though, his exciting broken field run has ended with a fumble at the goal line. "I'm out of here," I say as I shake Duke's hand. "Thanks, Post," he says. "I'll be in touch." I head for the door and say to the warden, please give my regards to the governor. I'm escorted outside the building where the cool air hits hard and feels exhilarating. A guard leads me to an unmarked prison van a few feet away. I get in and he closes the door. "The front gate," I say to the driver. As I ride through the sprawl of Holman Correctional Facility, I am hit with fatigue and hunger and relief. I close my eyes, breathe deeply, and observe the miracle that Duke will live to see another day. I've saved his life for now. Securing his freedom will take another miracle. For reasons known only to the people who run this place, it has been on lockdown for the past 5 hours. As if angry inmates might organize into a bestial-like mob and storm death row to rescue Duke. Now the lockdown is subsiding. The excitement is over. The extra manpower brought in to maintain order is withdrawing, and all I want is to get out of here. I'm parked in a small lot near the front gate, where the TV crews were unplugging and going home. I thank the driver, get in my little Ford SUV, and leave in a hurry. 2 miles down the highway, I stop at a closed country store to make a call. His name is Mark Carter. White male, age 33, lives in a small rental house in the town of Bayless, 10 miles from Verona. In my files, I have photos of his house and truck and current living girlfriend. 11 years ago, Carter raped and murdered Emily Bruin, and now all I have to do is prove it. Using a brunette, sorry, that's not even close to the word. I am so terribly sorry for that. Using a burner, I called the number of his cell phone, a number I'm not supposed to have. After 5 rings, he says, "Hello? Is this Mark Carter?" "Who wants to know?" "You don't know me, Carter, but I'm calling from the prison. Duke Russell just got a stay, so I'm sorry to inform you that the case is still alive. Are you watching television?" "Who is this?" "I'm sure you're watching the TV, Carter. Sitting there on your fat ass with your fat girlfriend hoping and praying that the state finally kills Duke for your crime. You're a scumbag, Carter. Willing to watch him die for something you did. What a coward.
Say it to my face.
Oh, I will, Carter. One day in a courtroom. I'll find the evidence, and before long, Duke will get out. You'll take his place.
I'm coming your way, Carter. I end the call before he can say anything else.
All right, so I know I said that we'd read two chapters, a book, or a podcast episode, and that's what to expect, but I only have 10 minutes left, and I don't think we're going to be finishing the chapter in 10 minutes, because just to read this one, it took like 15, which isn't probably even close, but I do want to say this, is that I'm sorry for all the mess-ups I had. I will try to get better, but, you know, mess-ups happen. I tried to correct myself as much as possible. But yeah, that was the first chapter in John Grisham's The Guardians novel. We will hopefully be able to get through two chapters next episode. If not, we can try to figure out a way to make these podcast episodes worth it if I do finish the chapter earlier but don't have time to finish a whole other chapter. I want to say thank you to everyone who is listening, though, and that I am back. And Book Readings is now officially here and is ready to be able to produce a podcast for people that just want to listen to a book. Now, like I said, we'll be reading, if you did listen to the trailer, we'll be reading every single type of book. I don't have a second book planned yet at the moment. But if you do want to follow my Twitter, if you do want to follow my Snapchat, my Instagram, my Twitter, Snapchat, and Instagram, I guess. It's really all I have. Please do go right ahead. I will be more than happy to do that. And yeah. So far, though, I'm going to be figuring out more and more things to do with the book, more and more things to do with this podcast, and see how far I can get with that. But I do want to thank everyone for listening and tuning into this podcast episode. And I hope to lend you my voice again for another podcast episode. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope to read to you next time. Thank you. Bye.